So this is the traditional opening chant given before talks.
Mu jo jin jin mi myo ho hyaku sen man go nan so gu ga kon ken mon toku ju ji gang ge nyo rai shin jitsu gi.
So I think in my email that I sent out, I said I was going to speak about Zen in the modern world or something like that. I can't remember exactly what I said. When I was thinking about it, I realised that actually there was something that I needed to think about and talk about before that, which is, for want of a better word, what is the essence of Zen? Maybe that's the best way of saying it. Because one of the questions that... So it's a question, I'll just be completely honest and say it's a question that I don't claim to have any answers to with regard to the role of Zen in the modern world. It's, in fact, and the best way of saying it is that the answer to the form that Zen takes in the Western world, or even in the world, or even in the kind of modern, postmodern world, is a question that won't be answered for probably about 100 to 200 years from now. And so it's kind of... presumptuous to try to create an answer right now, because it's an answer that's created through our practice and through the practice of others like us, naturally, unconsciously, automatically, rather than someone saying, okay, that's what they do in Japan, now, based on what they do in Japan, let's change it like this, I have the answer, this is the answer, this is what Zen looks like in the West. Okay, that's not the way the answer can happen. The answer will happen naturally, unconsciously, automatically, through evolution of our practice, evolution of the way we do things, through a dialectic with what has been in Japan before, rather than us being able to say. But nonetheless, and you can see the same thing happened when Buddhism came to China, when Zen came to China, and when Zen came from China to Japan. There's always something which is essential, which has been preserved since the days of Buddha, and in fact since the days of before Buddha. And there's always also the way it manifests in the society, in each society that it's in. But the way it manifests is a product of the karma of that society. It's a product of the times, the place and the times. But it's something that we can't kind of force to happen. It's something that happens naturally. So that's why I wanted to first of all think about, okay, what is it about Zen? Because one of the things that we need to be careful about is if some of the essential things of Zen get lost in the planting into our world. If some of those things get lost, then that's not good. And if we look at what happened is that there's something that comes from Buddha, and there's also something that each society brings. And so... In the case of when Buddhism came to China, there was very much a dialectic with Taoism. And you can see in Zen teachings that there are certain Taoist elements which maybe aren't there in the Buddha's original teachings. And I think what's going on here, when it's reaching the West, there's a dialectic with, for want of a better word, psychoanalyst, psychotherapeutic dialogue. That's the thing that is most kind of engaged with Buddhism at the moment. The Western psychoanalytic, psychotherapeutic dialogue is most engaged with Buddhism. And the question is, what positive things does that dialogue bring, but also what are the risks with that dialogue? And so there's something which is both positive and a risk, is this mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, mindfulness-based stress reduction, etc., which is both, it brings something positive, but it also is a risk in that perhaps something of the essence of what our practice is about gets lost if it gets reduced to a therapy. So that's kind of shaping what I'm saying. But what I really want to speak about is what are the things that make Zen Zen? What are the things that make what we do Zen? And also, as I've kind of hinted at that, there's very much a... When we practice, we are in the present moment, in the eternal of the present moment, but we're also linked to a history that stretches back to 600 years ago to Dogen, stretches back 1,200 years ago to Bodhidharma, stretches back 2,500 years ago to Buddha, and stretches back beyond Buddha, because Buddha, though he gave a particular slant on it, was engaged with practices which existed before him. And so it's practices that have come from a very, very long time ago, and practices that, if we think about it, will stretch far, far into the future, beyond the things that we care about and, you know, the concerns that we have now. The practice will just... And we are like a little bead on a great, 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 great chain. And we are kind of... Something is passing through us from far back in time to far forward in time. And if you think about, like, capitalist society is only about 300 years old. And Zen practice existed far beyond, far before capitalism, and will probably exist far beyond capitalism. You know, it's just so the kind of things that maybe we think about and are concerned about will pass in humanity's history, but the practice will continue unless humanity completely screws it up. But
yeah,
so it's good to have that kind of big perspective as well as the in the moment perspective on what we do. And in fact, in La Jonjonnière, the head temple in Europe, one of the pillars says, "May this temple stand for 1,000 years." It has calligraphy, "May this temple stand for 1,000 years." So there's that kind of sense of thinking of the big picture rather than the just our lifetime picture. So what is it? What is this kind of essence of Zen? So it is a practice, a philosophy in the broadest sense of that word, way of thinking, and a way in which we engage with living. So it's a practice, a way of thinking, and a way of engaging with living. And you know the basics of the practice, so I'm not going to talk a lot about that. But what I want to say is that one of the key things about it is that it is, and this is again why I want to emphasise the kind of what is important about Zen, so that we can think about what the dialogue with the West risks in Zen. So the Zen is very much about connection between the personal and the universal. It's about accepting our ego as it is, but seeing that there is something vaster than our ego, which we link with through practice. And so we do that when we sit, when we let go of our thoughts, we connect with something which is beyond our ego. We see the space in which our ego arises and see that our personality, even though it is necessary that we engage with life through our personality, there's no other way of engaging with life, but we see that our personality is only a small, limited manifestation of reality. And we don't get trapped in what our personality is, what our karma is, etc. That's just one small manifestation of reality. We don't get caught up in that. So this is something that comes through the practice of Zen. The other thing, the things that really are key in Zen is also the idea of Mushotoku, which is that when we engage with Zen, we let go of all our personal hopes and fears for what we might get out of Zen. So it's very difficult. So it's always easier to see in other people when they are practicing trying to get something than it is to see it in ourselves. But the essence of Zen is that when you sit down, you let go of your of wanting to get anything through the practice, whether that's wanting to get enlightenment, whether it's wanting to get kind of status in the Zen organization, whatever it is, you let it go. And so you aspire to simply let go of the desire for personal gain through that. But you don't kind of pretend that those things, in my view, you don't pretend that those things exist. I think that someone who thinks that they've completely let go of personal gain is probably deluding themselves, and it's more important to shine a light on these tendencies in us. So that is one thing that if we look at this dialogue with the psychotherapy, there's a risk there, because the psychotherapeutic dialogue is effectively, what can I get out of meditation? You see what I mean? And that's not to say that those things don't come from meditation. I would, because meditation does make one more self-aware. It does make one, at times, gives one a sense of peace. It does make one better able to deal with our emotions. But if we see it as only a means for doing those things, then we lose the universal aspect of it. And that's the risk. So it's not to say that using it as a therapy isn't a good thing. It's appropriate at times, but that's not the essence. And so that's what we... And the other thing, again, which the kind of psychotherapeutic dialogue risks is the act of togetherness. That when we practice meditation, when we practice Zazen, it is not us alone. It is seeing ourselves as part of a community of practitioners. And that what comes from the meditation is, again, not ourselves alone. It is a community of practitioners. And so this is essence of Mahayana Buddhism. It says, and when we chant the Hanya Shingyo, at the end of the Hanya Shingyo, we say, Gyate, Gyate, Hara, Gyate, Haraso, Gyate, Boji, Sawaka, which is saying, together, we practice together, and we travel together on this way. And if we think about, okay, what does my practice look like? Okay, so I had someone the other day who came for introduction. I was saying, okay, place your hands like that. And he said, left hand and right hand? And I said, yeah, left hand and right. And he said, well, I'm used to doing it right hand and left hand. And I said, yeah, that's how they do it in India. In Japan, they do it left hand and right hand. With Japanese tradition, let's do it left hand and right hand. And he said, oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. I've got to do it in right hand and left hand. Can't do it. I'm so used to it. And, you know, there's the idea of doing what's right for you, doing your personal thing. Mm-hmm. And that is very much a Western thing. And to a certain extent, one abandons oneself to the practice, even though aspects of it are not quite how maybe we would personally choose it to be. We abandon it because we do it together with others. And so we do it together with others in the way that we all do it. And sometimes it is necessary. Like, sometimes people need to sit on stools because if they didn't sit on stools, they'd be in complete agony. That's absolutely fine. You see what I mean? But if people are just doing it just to make life a little bit easier for themselves... So we need to watch this tendency in ourselves. We need to try to harmonise with others, do the way things everyone else does, to create that sense of community and the sense of working together. Because the practice, the Zen practice, is unique to each of us, but it is a collective experience. So when we sit on the mat, we face our own mind demons, but everyone is together facing mind demons, even though they manifest in different ways. The next thing I want to say is about another really important part of Zen practice is the rhythm of practice, which is called Dokan, the ring of the way, which is Pierre's Zen name, as you may know. Dokan, which means the ring of the way. And Dokan effectively means the ring of the way, the ring in the sense of going round in a circle. And so you could use the Tibetan or Indian expression mandala. And it's the mandala of practice. The mandala of practice is that one allows oneself to get hooked into a rhythm of practice and stay with it. See? And so, traditionally, it was easy because you would be in a temple or in a monastery. Yeah, you'd be in the monastery, and you had no choice but to abandon yourself to the rhythm of the monastery. And if ever you go on a sesshin, then it's very easy to abandon yourself to the rhythm of the sesshin. You don't need to worry about the time, because the bells, the woods, etc. will tell you, now's the time to wake up, now's the time to work, now's the time to eat, now's the time to do zazen. So you don't need to worry about time. You just can abandon yourself to the rhythm of what goes on. And that's something that it's monastic practice allows people to do, which it's something that it's far harder for us to find in the West. And so I'm saying this not because I have an answer, but because it's something that we need to think about, how we can find this rhythm of practice which carries you over time. And it probably means, in the West, it means some sense of practicing on one's own at times, but still connecting with the dojo, particularly... You know, if you live far away, then so it means kind of creating these rhythms in our lives, but trying to make those rhythms shared with others rather than it's our own personal rhythm, trying to find ways to make the rhythm shared. And then connected with that also is the idea of that the practice that we have is not just sitting zazen in the dojo, but trying to have awareness throughout our life, through all the different aspects of our lives, in the relationships we have, in our work, the difficult moments, in our leisure, still trying to be aware, trying to maintain something, some sense of not being trapped in our own personal ego, but having some sense of vision beyond our personal ego. And again, that's far easier in a monastic setting, in that in a monastic setting, there was little chance, like the one that I did before, just now, which is the one that's used before reading sutras or before speaking about the teachings. So in a monastic setting, there are many of those. There's one before you brush your teeth. There's one before you go to the loo. There's one before you wipe your ass. You know, there are these little things which are designed to remind you in that moment that it's not just for personal reasons that you do these things. And so again, that's a question in my mind, is how do we find that spirit in our lives? Is there some way, how do we find that spirit of making sure that we don't just become people who are Zen when we're in the dojo and any old thing when we're outside the dojo? But on the other hand, not becoming completely po-faced about that, you know, not become sort of carrot stuck up the arse job. Trying to find a way to bring that awareness in a living, vibrant way into our whole life. So those are the kind of things that I wanted to share with you about. What is it about Zen practice? What is it about Buddhism that steps beyond the psychotherapeutic formulations that are beginning to appear today? And some of the questions that are in my mind about, okay, how might this shape? What questions do we need to ask ourselves about how Zen is shaped? But as I said before, these are questions that will be answered not in our lifetimes. We can only have small tentative answers, which we can create collectively and see where we go. Okay, so thank you for listening.
I'll do the closing chant.
Chishikai diki kunjiren kafu jashin chin chin jin cho ihi kishurin bujo song.